Market Watch is proudly brought to you by topsport.com.au. Topsport is the home of the widest and most competitive range of NRL markets, including the new Same Game Multi. Gamble responsibly.
G'day everyone, welcome to the latest instalment of Keeping Watch. That's right, we've got ourselves a winner, we've got ourselves a name of the podcast. We've got to work out, I think Tristan Merlihan put that nomination in to save himself the $100 cash. He's on the line from, he's the number one seed from Top Sport. We've got former Australian Test wicketkeeper Brad Haddin, and we've got current Australian spinner, he is the GOAT, Nathan Lyon, as our special guest today. Welcome, everyone, but a very special welcome to you, Nate. Thanks for jumping on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Jimmy. Looking forward to it.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm pretty excited about having the GOAT on. I've got some good stories about the GOAT. But one thing I'm curious about, Nathan, we've been running a bit of a competition to get a name, and Jimmy calls himself the GOAT of our show, actually. Secret straight up to the listeners. When he approached you about coming on the show, what show did he say you're coming on to?
It was simply just called the Jimmy Smith Show. I had absolutely no idea that you were on here or Tristan. So I can understand what you're going with the GOAT call. So there you go.
Well, you know what? That lino sort of helps out a bit, because I've been trying to get in contact with Jimmy over the last couple of days to talk about can we get the GOAT on? What can we talk about? And he's been blocking the calls. There's one reason I think he likes us to call him the GOAT. So if we talk to you today about being Mr. Lyon and Jimmy's the GOAT, just don't be offended.
No, Mr. Lyon's dad just called me Gaz and I'll be right.
Done.
Mate, fair dinkum, you blokes are red hot. And that's a massive stitch up that I should have seen coming a mile away. But anyway, hey, Tristan, it's pretty exciting, to have a couple of ex-test cricketers. Oh, sorry. One current, one ex-test cricketers on the line.
Very exciting. I appreciate both the boys jumping on. Great to have a couple of goats on here as well. So it's really good. I'm looking forward to the chat. I'm looking forward to some of these stories, because we all know the relationship with the spinners and the keepers. There's plenty of bonding that goes on there. So looking forward to the next 15, 20 minutes to hear a few good old yarns.
Now, just be careful, Tristan. You lie with dogs, you catch fleas, mate. You start hanging around with these two blokes, all right? So, hey, let's jump into it, Nate. I want to know, we've got this huge test series coming up. We're so excited about it. It's so great that it's going ahead with the Ashes. But how's your preparation going? You know, New South Wales has been very challenging about what you can and can't do, even from a training perspective, let alone playing point of view. So where are you at with that?
Yeah, it's been a bit challenging, to be honest with you, Jimmy. But we've been very lucky. So a big thanks has to go out to the New South Wales government. We've been able to train during the whole lockdown in small groups, in separate times and all that stuff. But it's been challenging, but I'm sick of training. I've been training for 6 months now, so I'm just ready to go. So I think our first Shield game is looking to be end of this month here in Sydney at Drummoyne Oval against Victoria. Then we'll just play it by ear and see where the second one is.
Yeah, Lino, we know the Ashes series, they're totally different beasts. The theatre behind a whole campaign that the whole nation gets behind it. And your record in Ashes is second to none. What are you looking forward to most about taking on this England team?
I think it's just a challenge again. Obviously, off the back of retaining the Ashes in 2019, I think we left some stones unturned over there. I think we can really come here in Australia and play a really positive brand of cricket and play a positive brand of cricket that will bring the crowds back and put a big smile on a lot of people's faces. We know how hard everyone's been doing it over the last couple of years. So the biggest challenge is going to be coming up against what everyone's saying that it's not the greatest England side, but I disagree. They've got some absolute superstars in there. Yes, they're missing the likes of Stokes and Archer, but they've still got the best pair in the world currently, and it's hard to go past. Jimmy Anderson has been pretty effective. I think this is what, his ninth Ashes series?
Yeah, I think the one thing with an Ashes campaign, Lino, and what I found is your rankings and your squads that you bring together are null and void. It's the passion that both countries show for this, but one thing I've enjoyed watching you over time is I enjoy watching how you deal with the Barmy Army. I know some players can get intimidated by, but you've still built up a real rapport with the Barmy Army.
Yeah, it's part of the game that I absolutely love, to be honest with you. It's quite hard. Their songs are pretty catchy, so it's pretty bad when Starkey or Jono's bowling from the other end. They're saying he's bowling shit and all this stuff, and you end up singing the whole song with them. So you've got to be very, very careful with that. But no, I'm fingers crossed that the Barmy Army can get out here somehow and create a pretty amazing atmosphere because, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that's one of the special things about playing in Ashes. There is a tradition of different things. You have the bugler with the Barmy Army, and they can bring 30 to 20,000 people out to watch a game. And interesting, you talk about the song. I remember going out to bat with Mitchell Johnson, and Mitch is there, and we're trying to talk serious. Let's get through this tough period. Let's do all the right things. And all I could do when I was looking in his eyes, I was thinking, he swings it to the left, he swings it to the right. And you're right, the tunes that they come up with are catchy. He had the ones with Super Fred, but they've got one for us all when we used to come out to bat. But it's interesting, though, Lino, starting this one, you're actually going to start this campaign at minus 10. I don't know if anyone knew that because...
you're an idiot.
Nathan Lyon is actually retired Moen Ali. He terrorised in last time he was out there. And the teams don't usually get together during the series, but they do come and have a drink together at the back end of the series after the last test. And Moen Ali, I thought, in the spirit of the Ashes, and Lino, you can highlight this book a bit more after you terrorise his career, but in good spirits when he walked into the change room after the last Ashes campaign.
Yeah, it was good banter. Obviously, a good challenge coming up against the whole English side. But Moen actually coming to the change rooms with the big piece of paper stuck to his front shin, and it's like had a big target on it and said, "Hit me, Gary." So it provided a good amount of banter, and yeah, it was good fun, good laugh.
No, he terrorised him the whole time, and I think. You go hard at each other on the field, and we see the theatre behind all these battles. But to see the way Moen Ali handled that situation when he walked into the change room, to me, it was all class.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's the biggest key. If you can go hard, hammer and tong on the field, and if you can have a beer up at the end of the day, it's all good. Jimmy, just put your hand up. You want to ask a question?
It's his show, Lino.
So what happened there? So we're zooming this one, so people are only getting the audio. But that was a visual clue for Brad and Tristan. But thanks for pointing it out too as well, Lino. That's great. Hey, just on the back of that, your good relationship with Moen Ali, despite the fact you retired him, is there anyone from all the teams around the globe that you have the best relationship?
Well, I think it's the English, to be honest with you. But saying that, the IPL is changing everything at the moment. Like there's a amount of guys over there. Josh Hazlewood's been becoming great mates with Mitch Santner, mainly because of the golf that they're playing over there in the IPL. But he talks about Faf du Plessis being one of the best blokes going around. So I think the IPL's changing that. Me personally, I think I have the best relationship with a few of the English guys.
Yeah, I was going to say, boys, like, is that something you guys have found, like, probably from when you were playing, Brad, and now, Nathan, you were obviously in both parts of it with the Big Bash and the IPL, like, is there a significantly different relationship with the players now, that you know each other a bit more, playing side by side with them as opposed to just purely competitors? Like, has that changed the sledging and that side of it, in the last 10 years?
Well, it hasn't changed Hadge, but he used to sledge. He didn't shut up. So it was good fun. I actually really enjoyed it. We need more of it, to be honest with you. But I think it has a little bit, to be honest with you. Obviously, I'm not as old as what Brad is, so he can probably talk about more stories back in the day. But
yeah, I think that Tristan can work a couple of ways. Yes, you build a good relationships cause of IPL. But another thing also, once you get back to your own country and you're getting ready for an Ashes campaign when there's no holes barred, you can also pick little things out of what you've seen up close, because Ashes series are won on guys winning big moments and winning those pressure moments. And if you see something over there that can help your team in an Ashes campaign, all that friendship's thrown out the window come that campaign.
Hey, Nate, I'm just looking at your numbers. 100 test matches, 399 wickets. So there's a big milestone. I mean, that's a big milestone for your 100th test. And of course, there's the 400th test wicket that's going to come very shortly. How much do you think about that sort of thing now, as opposed to, and I guess it's you're yet to get there, and Brad has been there, about, you know, looking back on your career and being proud of those achievements, as opposed to when you're in the moment?
Yeah, well, over the last 6 months, I haven't played a test match since January, so I've had a lot of time to reflect on where I am at in my career and where I want to get to. I haven't really thought about the 400th wicket too much, because it's a while off yet. So I think it's just more about what I've been able to achieve and the effect that has had on me and my family as well. So a little bit of time, but hopefully I've got a few more years left in me that I can tick off a couple more goals that I want to tick off.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I've seen most in your game, Lono, is your constant improvement. You set a hard task straight away, getting a wicket with your first ball in Test cricket, but constant involvement as a Test cricketer. And is that something you're conscious about, making sure you're still turning up, got that love to get better and better? I know you're a student of the game with your craft, is just to try to see how high you can take that ceiling.
Yeah, 100%. And that's been a big focus here at New South Wales Cricket, that just within pre-season training, I've been a big focus on getting fitter and getting stronger, but also skill-wise, trying to get better in bowling, understanding different situations, trying to come up with different training mechanisms, whether that's bowling into the rough and creating different challenges for a young batting group at New South Wales. But also providing me different challenges as well. So I think there's a lot of room for improvement, whether that's flicking a different ball, whether that's different stock balls, whatever I can come up with. It's just about trying to get better, I guess.
What about with the obviously with Glenn McGrath and Jace Dizzy Gillespie and these boys, they knocked up a 50 or 100 or a double ton as they got deeper into their career. Is that a goal you've got or something you'd love to put on the resume at the end of the when you hang up the boots eventually?
Well, it's got to an interesting stage in my career. I think I've got the record for the most Test match innings in Test match cricket history with no 50. So I don't know whether I want to get there or not, or just keep that record to myself and see how long I can push it. But no, it's something that I want to get better at. I know I've batted with Hads in the past, and we've had some good fun out in the middle. And Hads used to be my batting's improved since I used to bat with Hads, and he used to wind me up pretty quickly because the bowling was fast or whatnot. So it was quite entertaining with Brad and the change rooms. But it's something that I'm trying to get better at. So fingers crossed we can get 50 one day.
I think Nathan had the easiest time to bat ever. He used to sit next to me and say, what do you think they're going to do? And I said, mate, you might as well take your pads off. He goes, oh, what, you think these two are going to score a lot? I said, mate, they're not bowling at your legs. They're going straight. They're going to try to hit your fingers. And he goes, Hads, be serious. I said, mate, I'm being serious. Then got the opportunity to bat with him a couple of times. And he's walked out to bat. He said the same thing. What do you reckon? I said, mate, get ready to duck. They're going to try to hit you in the head. And there was a time at the MCG. We had a bad day. We're trying to get a partnership. We ended up putting on 40 on at the end. And they're bouncing Lino. He goes, what do you do? I said, well, don't stand still. They're going to hit you. So do whatever you can to get out of the way of the ball. And he's playing a lot of shots. They got a message sent out. And they said to Lino, I said, mate, stay in there with Hads. He might be able to put a few runs on the board before the end. And he's looked at me. He goes, mate, you're one telling me this. So I said, mate, I'm telling you, they're only going to go at your head or fingers.
Yeah, so that was Jimmy Anderson bowling at the MCG. He bowled me 5 bumpers in a row. Then Hads walked up. Hads has been sitting on his back, just
laughing.
Don't come up to me. Then he goes, walks up to the wicket and goes, clear your front leg, hit him over mid on, and you'll be the king of the MCG. You hit him for 6 or 4. I said, Hads, if he does that, he's going to hit me fair in the teeth if you bowl short. And he goes, don't worry about it. He'll get greedy. He'll go to the stumps. And fair enough, he did that. I cleared the front leg and donged him for four, and the crowd went nuts. So.
The reason is knowing fast bowler's mentality. He's bowled in five bumpers in a row. I'm sitting up on my bat laughing my head off. And knowing the quicks, they want to knock that number 11 over. They'll eventually go up the stumps. And at Cow Corner was Bay 13. And I remember walking down, and you talk about getting the crowd involved. I said, Lino, he's definitely coming at your stumps. So let's hit a six into Bay 13. How good would that be? He said, well, what happens if he bumps me? I said, oh, let's just go red or black today. I reckon you're right. I reckon he's going. The ball was exactly where we wanted it. He just got an inside edge and got enough of it to go before. But just imagine, Lino, if you got the whole piece of that and hit it six into Bay 13, they'd still be talking about it.
Hey, well, I'll try it then, Boxing Day this year.
Hey, just on that, mate, you've been climbing up the order too, haven't you? You've been batting a fair bit at 10. So he sold you a little short there, Bradley.
That's because Josh is a lot bigger than me, and he bullies me and pushes me out before I get the chance to fight back. So, and I've got a bat when the batters get scared. Don't forget that, Jimmy. So,
yeah, that's true. That's true. Hey, I want to ask you, mate. Sorry, Hads. I want to ask you. Getting back to a bit of serious stuff. What's your greatest attribute as a cricketer, as a sports person? I think I know, but I'd love to hear from you.
I wouldn't have a clue, to be honest. It's something that I think for me is never give up attitude and always willing to back your mates and do anything for your team. That's something that I'd pride myself on, and especially when the bowling gets fast and it gets dark and Smithy doesn't want to go out the bat, and he taps me on the shoulder and says, out you go. I think that's a prime example of it. But yeah, it's an interesting one. So I think that's something that I'll look back at the end of my career and figure out what I was good at and what I wasn't.
Yeah, I reckon I could answer that a bit too, Jimmy. I think one of Lino's strength is his character. He's one of those guys, you know, when push comes to shove in the middle, you want him next to you. You know he's playing for Australia for those right reasons. The baggy green's important to him. And I think to answer that in full is you just have to see the position Nathan holds. Nathan's the leader of the song for Australia. You've got your captain, yeah, and then you've got the next guy who sings the song for Australia. So, Lino, that must have been an amazing moment when Mike Hussey handed you a letter, called you to his room and had a chat about taking over the song for Australia. I've got goosebumps.
Yeah, 100%. I've got the letter just around the corner in the room. It's something that a day I'll never forget. And, I was pretty blown away by it, to be honest with you. So in this big scheme of things now, it's something that's pretty humbling and probably up there at the proudest moment of my career for sure.
And I'll tell you the importance of that as well. We know how important the Australian captain is to the Australian cricket team. And we can sit here and have a debate that he's more important than the Prime Minister. But once that match is finished, the Australian captain goes out the window and all attention goes on to Nathan Lyon. So that's how important that position is. And you just have to look at the characters before him. You got Ricky Ponting, who sung it, Michael Hussey, David Boone, Heels, the list goes on and on and on. So, mate, that's one of the things. I know Lino's a very humble man, but that's one of the things when you sit back at the end of your career, you can have a cold beer and enjoy that.
Yeah, I look forward to it. Hopefully a few years left, though.
Yeah, yeah. Is there a standout time you sang the song? Is there, of all the times you've sung it and led the song, is there one moment that stands out?
Well, when I got given it, it was in 2012-13 January tests against Sri Lanka. Anyway, then Huss sung it then, and we played 9 test matches following in India, then in England. We didn't win one. So I actually thought, well, I was going to be the first bloke to get handed the team song but never sing it. So the first one was actually at the Gabba, and I was proper nervous because you had the likes of Haddon and Clark and Watson and Johnson, these guys who I had pictures on my wall growing up. Then suddenly you're leading their team song, so I was pretty nervous. So that one jumps out at me, but there's been some really good ones actually. So hopefully there's a few more to come though. It'd be nice.
Well, what do you make of the England side that's been announced? There's a few notable omissions. No Jofra Archer, you'll be happy about that. Ben Stokes, well, he's back doing some bowling in the net, so that's interesting. Joe Root's there. What was your take when you first read the squad?
I thought it was exactly the same squad that I would have picked previously. And they were all talking that the quarantine was going to get the best of them and they weren't going to come out. But I've said it before, Ashes series are the type of Ashes. The Ashes series are the series that makes people's careers. And plus, Christmas out here in Australia, summer out here in Australia, it's pretty good. A lot better than being in London, to be honest with you. So I'm pretty excited by the challenges that lay ahead. I've got a sneaking feeling that Stokes will be out here and be a part of it. So don't be surprised when you see that. Disappointing Jofra's not out here. It would have been an amazing challenge for our batters. I don't want to face him out here, don't get me wrong, but it would have been a good challenge for us and would have been, as I said, a good challenge for where our batters are at as well. So even though they've got Broad and Anderson, so it'll be decent.
Yeah, I tend to agree with about the Ben Stokes. I've seen a few things recently. They started to pick up a bat again and go through his drills, and we're still enough time away for him to be a twist. And there wouldn't be an Ashes campaign without a hero and a villain, but there also wouldn't be an Ashes campaign without a twist. The theatre's different around it, and I'm with you. I think we will see Ben Stokes at some stage, and I think that for the series is great news. He's a performer under pressure, and he loves nothing more than beating Australia as well. So I think we might see him out here as well, Lino.
Out of all the grounds around the country and the world, Lino, where would you rate as your favourite place to play?
I've got two that stand out to me. Sydney's probably up there just because of the pure fact that family and friends, you play in there in front of them a lot. But Adelaide Oval is probably the best cricket wicket in the world in my eyes, and purely off the back of having a contest between bat and ball. Adelaide's up there. Then you throw the pink ball in as well, and the theatre down there. Adelaide's unbelievable test. If you want to go to a test match, that's one I'd recommend going down and being a part. You won't watch much cricket, but I dare say it'll be decent fun.
I'm trying to think of the Adelaide test match where you bowled Australia to victory. You did it fourth innings, and it was sort of like the big tick, and this is many years ago, the big tick that everyone said, well, you know, he's doing this, he's doing that, but this is what we want him to do, and that's when you did it. Does that play a part in making that one of your favourite grounds? Because it was a real confirmation of you as a senior Australian bowler.
I think that's got a lot to do, that test match in 2014 when Pup ripped his hamstring and Hads actually took over. So I think that's got a lot to do with that, my success that day. I think if you look at Adelaide Oval, I've got obviously a lot of connections there, on the field, off the field, working there, etc. So I think that's probably why my favourite ground is probably Adelaide. But I think Damien down there is unbelievable curator, and it's the facilities there are incredible, so it's good fun.
Yeah, I'll tell you about that test a bit there. A lot of interesting things happened over the 24 hours that from that last day, that test leading up. I remember Michael going off with his hamstrings, and we still needed, I think, 7 wickets in the last session. Coley was on fire. He scored 200s for the match, and it was my first time I got to captain in a test match, and I remember I had so much advice coming from everyone. I thought, I need to simplify this situation here, so I just walked up to Lino and said, oh, you're going to be bowling. He said, oh, what now? I said, no, for the rest of the day, so no matter what happens, you're staying on from one end, you ball or roll. And he goes, really? I said, yeah. Well, I said, that's one end sorted, and he was outstanding. He was outstanding. He got 5 or 6 and bowled us to victory in the 7, end. Right? Yeah, I didn't count, or I wasn't captain for the first part of the game. Took you too long to get there. But and another part of that as well is we're having an unbelievable beer at the bar afterwards. Mitch Marsh is holding court with all the ex-players. He nearly dropped Cole. He's meant to take an easy catch at waist height, and he went down his knees and he put the cups down on his hands and nearly dropped it. So he was entertaining the crowd with that. And there was a lot of talk about who was going to be Australian captain. I remember having a beer with Mark Taylor, and I don't know if this is the smartest thing I've done or the most stupid thing I've done, but I said, Tubby, if you're looking for a captain, don't come to me. And I'm at that age to retire and maybe have a look at someone like Steve Smith for that test match. So I'm still don't know if that was the beer talking or stupidity, but I think that was my captaincy lasted about one session with Australia.
It worked.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I've seen you out and had a few beers, Brad. It's not the most stupid thing you've done. So just to clarify that too. So.
have a our window at the end of a test match, we can get away with anything. So,
exactly.
But there's the best moments you'll take at the back end of your career too, Lionel. I know we all have a lot of success on the field. We're playing some great test matches, but the moment after a test match when you're just sitting in there with your teammates, you've been to battle with them for 5 days, they're the moments that you miss and cherish the most, I think, when you retire.
Yeah, well, I'm missing them now over the last 8 months, so I can kind of understand that. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to hopefully a lot more of those moments. A couple stand out to me after the Ashes in England. That was all over the Ashes documentary, which was pretty incredible scenes with the celebrations. So, yeah, I'll definitely miss him once it's time.
Have you got a day, Nathan? Brad made mention of the fact you got a wicket with your very first ball in Test cricket. We've talked about the success you've had at Adelaide and many other times. Was there any time when you were playing in a Test match where you just thought, this is me at my best? This is when everything felt right, everything felt good, and you played your very best cricket. Was that special moment? You're in the zone?
Hopefully it's yet to come, to be honest with you, Jimmy. There's been a couple of moments where I think, shit, I'm on here, which is nice, but I think the biggest challenge within being professional sport is making your good days great, because we have a lot more bad days than what we do have good days. So I think the big challenge is, mate, when you're on, you make the most of it type thing. So there's been a couple of days where I felt really good. One that stands out is Edgbaston Test 2019, last day five, which it just seemed the ball come out of my hand really nicely. I was pretty confident with it.
Mm. Well, I know we spoke earlier about how you terrorised Mo and Ali. If you had a crystal ball and you're looking at this series, who would you love to have the wood over come the fifth test of this summer?
I couldn't care. Whoever comes out the bat for England, to be honest with you. I think it's going to be a different challenge. I think they figured out a little plan against me at the back end of the Ashes in 2019 and play me all off the back foot. So I've been working hard and come up with different plans. I think Rory Burns is going to be quite challenging. Here in Australia, he's going to wait and hopefully use my bounce to his advantage. So I've been working on a couple of different balls to hopefully hit him in the shin. But I think someone like Joe Root, you want to challenge yourself against. Obviously, he's the best batter in the world at the moment. And I know Smithy's not too happy about that. So fingers crossed our batters can line up and knock him off that again.
Well, the GOAT, we hope you enjoyed the when you do get on the field for New South Wales. And thank you very much for it, mate, your presence today. I was a bit nervous about you coming on, to be honest. I know we've shared the change room a lot. We've had some good wins and some bad wins, but thank you for joining us, and thank you for leaving everything intact and in the change rooms as a good Australian cricketer should.
Always happy to anytime, Bradley.
Fantastic, mate. Great to have you on. All the best with the prep, and go get that English team, hey?
Too easy. Thanks, guys. Enjoy.
Nathan Lyon, great to have him on the podcast. So well done on that one, Bradley. Really appreciate it. I tell you what, just on that, Rory Burns, he's not going to sell many tickets, is he, Rory? I tell you what, isn't he hard to watch? But anyway, that's a completely separate issue. Bradley, could you explain to our listeners on the Keeping Watch podcast exactly where you are right now and how long you've been doing that?
Well, I'm actually in hotel quarantine. This is my 60th day of hard quarantine. Over the last 7 months, I've done 60 days of hard quarantine, but I've got about a week left of this one. I'm at about 60, I think it was 67 COVID tests, which have been all negative. Oh. So yeah, I'm just halfway through quarantine. So if you guys want to talk for hours, I'm happy for the company. So yeah, coming back from the IPL, we've gone back into hotel quarantine. We just missed the relaxed quarantine stuff from the Premier, which is on the 1st of November. So yeah, we've been stuck in here for over a week now.
What did you make of the finish to the IPL? The Chennai Super Kings are the champs, beating Kolkata pretty comfortably in the final.
Yeah, I thought that Chennai were outstanding this second half of the tournament. They played a really attractive brand of cricket. They got a really experienced team with MS Dhoni, Jadeja, who can be argued is probably one of the best 2020 bats in the world. But KKR also, they had a really disappointing tournament the first half. And the way they come out and played the second half of the tournament, they played a lot more freedom. They took the game on. They used their spinners really smartly in the second leg of the tournament as well. So they played a good brand of cricket. I thought Delhi might have gone into the final. To me, that they were the leading team through the comp with the Chennai Super Kings. But in the end, I think Chennai deserved to win. MS Dhoni sort of turned back the clock a bit at the business end of the tournament. Mightn't look like much on paper, but a couple of times he'd got run like 16 runs off 8 balls just to put the icing on the win at the end.
Yeah, well, even with the final, like Kolkata were cruising, weren't they? They were none for 90 after 10 overs, and they looked like they were in great shape. And then obviously the collapse happened, and I think that's what you sort of touch on with Dhoni. Like, to get someone come in and get the innings going and get, you know, 10 runs, 15 runs here, it can add up. And just watching how it all unfolded at our end was amazing. But yeah, like that's a key point. Like, you can see how Chennai only lost 3 wickets the entire day. Is that something that, you know, being involved in the teams, like it'd have to be a real key focus on those first 5 to 10 balls to sort of keep things ticking along, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I tell you what was really interesting about the tournament is whoever won the power play won the game. The wickets got tied in the end, so it was really hard to play during those middle overs and start your innings. So you had to play brave in the power play. You had to go for wickets. And on the flip side to that, you had to try to take the game on as well to get some momentum in the innings. But the big factor out of that also is you talk about test cricket being you needing the captain and needing the game smarts. But the way Dhoni rallied his troops when they were under pressure, like they were none for 90, they're cruising. Just the presence he has on the field, not to panic, and that rubs off on his team. So that, to me, just shows the importance of having an experienced leader in that form of the game. It's just not hit and giggle. There's a lot of analytics that go into it, making sure guys are performing under pressure, not panicking when those big moments. And that's what Chennai did really well in the end. They just stayed calm, they stayed controlled, and they got the result.
As an Aussie fan, like, I guess I've always had the mentality that, you know, Josh Hazlewood's been more like a longer form player, like a test player one day, is like he's played 17 T20s for Australia. Do you think that's going to, him performing so well in the final and over this series, do you think that changes that sort of perception, I guess? Do you think you'd get more opportunities for the Aussies over the next little bit in the short and form version?
I tell you what he did do, Josh. He complimented the Chennai team really well. They had a lot of bowlers that were short, probably just under 6 foot. And over in the UAE, you needed height because you could get variable bounce on the wicket. And the one thing Josh did really well, he attacked the stumps and made the batsman make a lot of decisions off the stumps with the variable bounce he had with the height. So I think that's a tactic that you can use going into this World Cup. He's making sure you're attacking the stumps with the height. And he just complimented that skill set of that team really, really well. I think he can play a huge part with Australia. Where they go, I think my gut feeling, they'll only go in with 2 quicks, 2 all-rounders and 2 spinners. So I'm not sure whether they'll go in with 3 quicks.
Let's talk about that, mate. Obviously, it started, the prelims are in action, Australia in action on Saturday night, and then the competition flows from there. There's a bit of pressure on this Australian side. They've slipped to 7th in the rankings as Justin Langer's, I think he's off his LinkedIn profile now, but he's been on it pretty comprehensively over the last couple of weeks. How have you looked at the Australians' preparation going into it and taking a wider view of it from a tournament and your experience in the IPL? Who do you look at and think, wow, they're playing better and might be little sneakies for the tournament?
So I think India have to have an advantage. They've had all their cricketers playing in the IPL. You've been playing on the three wickets that they're going to use in Dubai, Abu Dhabi and Sharjah. So from a cricket point of view, I think they're in a really good spot with conditions. Australia, I don't think we can look too much into their form in 2020, to be honest. But we had the winter tours where they tried a lot of players, a lot of their top players stayed home for varied reasons. But I don't think you can look too much in their form. I think this Australian team is as well-balanced team as they've had in a long, long time. You got Glenn Maxwell, who's come off outstanding form in the IPL. We haven't seen that consistency from him for a long time, and his form there was outstanding. And the one thing I liked about Maxwell's form, he was scoring runs when they were under pressure. He kept the game moving, and I think he'll bat at four. I think it'll be interesting how they use Steve Smith. If it was me, I would bat Steve Smith at five. Then you have Wade, Stoinis and Agar behind him. But Australia's big Achilles heel has been the middle overs. And Steve Smith's our best player of spin. He can manipulate the field. He can get off strike. But on the flip side with that, the power plays are going to be so important. So I would be going hard with Finch, Warner. Mitch Marsh has done a good job at three. And Maxwell at top of the order. And leave Steve Smith as Mr. Fix-It role at number five.
And that's a really key point. Like, I'm just looking at our market now for the top batsmen for Australia over the tournament. You got Finch and Warner, obviously short price favourites, 320 Finch, 350 Warner, despite probably neither being in the greatest of form. And then you've got Glenn Maxwell there at $6 with Smith at 480 and Marsh 550. So they're obviously expecting the Aussies to score most of their runs up the top. But you know, if a few early wickets fall, there might be a little bit of opportunity there down the list for players.
Yeah, I think Mitch Marsh is an interesting one. I think the way he's playing and his confidence at the moment in that role at number three can be a real game changer. I like his power at the top of the order. If you get him playing at Sharjah on that small boundaries, he could be really, really dangerous there. So I'd continue with that experiment of Mitch Marsh at three. I think he feels comfortable there. And I think he gives us a bit of an X factor there at number three, with Warner and both Finch at the top of the order going hard as well. So, yeah, and it's just going to be interesting how they use Steve Smith.
How fluid are batting orders in T20s? Because I get frustrated. Even in the BBL, I'll be watching it. There'll only be five overs left, and Glenn Maxwell's still sitting in the sheds. And I'm like, why? He can be the most explosive batsman. Like, you know, how rigid could that be? Like, if Finch and Warner bat for a long time, should Maxwell be next in?
Yeah, 100%. I think that's one thing you've got to do. A big thing in 2020 cricket is about matchups. There's a lot of analytics that go involved in that. And if you study your opposition team, there might be a matchup against a team like South Africa or West Indies, for example, who've got a couple of left arm spinners where you send Maxwell in at a certain time. It's not about how many wickets you lose. You might say, if we get to the seventh over, no matter what happens, Glenn Maxwell comes in. And I think now that Australia have got their full complement of players, you can have discussions like that. I think over the last, in that winter tour, we're giving a lot of guys an opportunity. We're trying to see who could fit different roles. But the one thing now you're in a tournament play is you'll be looking at those analytics. And for example, you might send someone like a Maxwell up from the seventh over, wanting back between 7 and 11 overs, because with the analytics, you might see that the opposition team bowl their spinners in that time in a consistent order. So to take advantage of that period can sometimes be the difference in an IPL match to whether you 2020 match to win it or lose it. We've seen it a bit in the IPL. Not all the time did when Chennai Super Kings, you'd think, oh, they're going to put Jadeja in after having a good run, that they'd put Dhoni in or they'd put someone else because they matched up better to the bowlers the opposition had.
How key is it then from the fielding's team captain to sort of read that and try to reverse engineer it and see Maxwell's coming in? Is the plan then to then change things up at your end? And what obviously you've captained many a team, that'd have to play a massive part in it from the fielding point of view too.
100%, and that's why I think you see the teams like England have been successful in these forms of the game, and you've seen the brand of cricket they've played in 50 overs. They had a captain in Owen Morgan who's really proactive in what he does with his bowlers, the way he reads the game. So you got Kane Williamson, the same for New Zealand. You've got to be switched on in those big moments in 2020, because if you miss an over, that over could go for 20 runs. It could actually cost you the outcome of the game. So that's very important. That's where your captaincy plays a really big role. I think Aaron Finch, he's really good at that too. He's really good at reading the game, going with his gut. And playing. And with this team, they're going to have a lot of options, the Australian team. The dark horse for me in the tournament is Pakistan. Is that with circumstances, they haven't played a lot of their cricket recently in Pakistan, but they've played a lot of their cricket in the UAE, and their form in this form of the game leading into this tournament is outstanding. They're an unpredictable team, so you don't really know what you're going to get, but they do enjoy this form of the game. So that's an interesting one. They're in a pool with India, Pakistan, New Zealand, Afghanistan. So that's going to be really interesting to see who goes through, because I think Pakistan's a real dark horse in this tournament.
Yeah, well, they've actually been one of the best back teams. They've been back from $11 into $9.50, very well supported to take it out. So there's a lot of people obviously echoing Brad's thoughts there.
Hey, have a look at you've given us your winner there, but have a look at the Ashes series, mate. I know we just had Nathan Lyon on and talking about it, but take your mate of Nathan's hat off and put your analytical punting cap on. And based on what you're seeing there, and based on the players that are coming out, and based on the conditions that they'll be facing, who's going to do well for Australia? Who's going to do well for England?
I think the one thing I'm going to look at to start with is the top order batting. I think that's hugely important in both teams, because you've got some match winners, say, for example, with the England team. You've got Joe Root coming in at four. You've got guys like Butler who can move the game forward but can be susceptible to a moving ball. So the openers are going to have to play a big role. The top three batters are going to have to do a lot of the batting, get through that new ball. It's going to be tough for the England openers. They're going to have a really experienced Australian attack who do bowl well on these wickets in Australia. So I think the openers are going to have to be really on their game to get through that new ball. There's going to be tough times, especially in the pink ball test at Adelaide, but you're going to have to suck your medicine, play time and win those moments. Test cricket's all about winning moments. And it might be in the pink ball test, you've got to get through the middle part of the game where things are going really well in the middle session, but you've got to pull things back in and get into damage control leading into that last session when it comes under lights and the ball starts swinging. So I think the top order of both teams have got a really big role to play.
Is it the two obvious standouts, Smith for Australia and Root for England, that'll do the best?
I think they're the ones everyone will lean to. And Nathan sort of alluded to a bit that Smith's keen for a big series because Joe Root's number one in the world. And, mate, those special players, they're driven by to be the best they possibly can in the world. So I think they're big players. I think the top three of each team. I think David Warner at the top. He didn't have a great series against England over there, but my word, he plays Australian conditions well. And if he gets off to a start and start to feel comfortable at the top of the order, there's a lot of sameness about this England attack where I think someone like David Warner can take advantage of. Who's going to open with him is an interesting one. We've seen recently Will Pekoski is out again. I think it was his 11th concussion, which is really scary, and it starts to become a really interesting one with someone so young, especially with all the history we know now about head knocks. So does he go at the top of the order with David? Usman Khawaja's come off 170 this week. He's a name that starts to come up as well. So there's some decisions to make there for Australia at the top.
Yeah, and another bloke there that's in really good form at the moment is Travis Head. Do you see him fighting his way back into the side, or how do you see that sort of position?
Yeah, he's an interesting one. But like Travis Head has been a vice captain of Australia. So he's been in a position, there's obviously leadership there. The one thing he's doing now, he probably didn't do when he played test cricket, is he's scoring big runs. And that's what you want. You want guys going back to state cricket and not getting 70 or 80. You want to get him 150. He's just got his second 200 in a one-day game. So I think his name has to come up. I think an interesting one for me is I think Moses Henriques could do a really good job at number 5 or 6. I think he won't get overawed by an Ashes campaign. He's experienced now, player for New South Wales. And if you look at his performances over the last couple of years, he's held that batting order together. He's come in not so great circumstances. He kept moving the game forward. He's getting hundreds. He's winning games. So I think he could be someone that comes up and bats in the middle order to fill that 5 or 6 spot.
Just on those runs, though, that you're talking about with Usman Khawaja, do they count if they get them against South Australia? Because I reckon Tristan could get a few in South Australia. Do they count? Bradley?
Oh, mate, they're half New South Wales team at the moment. Young Andrew's down there. I think the one thing we know about Usman, he plays the home conditions well. And I think when you're selecting the team for an event like this, you've got to look at our home conditions. And he's one guy that does play our home conditions well. I know young Pekoski did really well when he got his opportunity. But the first and foremost, I think we've got a duty of care that he's okay. And let's just hope the head knocks is not as serious as they have been in the past.
Speaking of young cricketers, what's I see in the Shield match over in Perth at the moment, Lawrence Neil Smith. He's taken a 5 for got a 50. Do you know much about him? He looks like he's you know, an all rounder that the Aussies might be sort of looking for down the line. Only 22 years old, obviously.
Mate, I actually think he's a night watchman there.
Really?
he might be doing Jason Gillespie. I think he did the same last Shield game as well. He got put up to a night watchman. I tell you what. That's one position you don't want to do well. I meant we just had no line on before, and I remember Ricky Ponting's last game. I didn't play in the test match, but Nathan Lyons walked out to bat. Ricky Ponting's last testy, everyone knew about that before. They lost the wicket late in the play at Perth. He's come in the tunnel, and you should have heard the scream, punter, punter, and all of a sudden Nathan Lyon walked out. You should have seen the air come out. The whole crowd whacker. So Nathan Lyons, he goes, I've never got that big of excitement when I've come out to bat before in my life. So, the young kid going well for Tasmania, mate, it's not a job you want to do well, I don't reckon.
Yeah.
I don't believe in night watchman.
Ooh, why not?
I don't think you should use him. I'm just never been a fan. I can see the benefit of them and protecting your middle order, but I like to, maybe it's my personality, I wouldn't like to sit there having all nervous energy, chewing your chewing gum 1,000 miles an hour, and the captain tap you on the shoulder and say, we're going to let you bat tomorrow if a wicket falls. Nah, I want to be out there. I need to get rid of that nervous energy.
Yeah. Hey, I want to ask you this one. As a former Australian wicketkeeper, the current Australian wicketkeeper is also the captain. He turns 37 on the 8th of December. There are a test match of 5 of them in 41 days, starting on December 8th. It's new territory for the Australian wicketkeeper to be doing this. Does he defy history? Do you continue to pick him? I mean, these are big decisions that could have a huge ramification on the series. And if you don't pick him, who's the next man in?
No, you're all over me today, aren't you?
Yeah.
I think Payne plays this series. I really do. He's the scary thing. He's just had surgery on his neck, which we hope's right to get him available for this series. I think he's still the man to lead us through the Ashes. It'll be interesting to see what he does at the end of this campaign. It might be a good time to walk away as an Australian captain with the urn. I think he's done a really good job, Tim Payne. I think his glove work is as good as anyone in the world. And you need your best glove man in these big series. That you talk about catches win matches, and it's nothing more important in a series like the Ashes. You don't want to give guys like Joe Root a second opportunity by dropping him. We've got three outstanding fast bowlers, or probably five that we can pick off. You've got probably one of the best spinners in the world are going to create chances. So you need your best clubman.
And, mate, you're rock solid with the current Australian captain. Well done on that one. Hey, we might wrap it up, boys. Keeping watch. What do you, mate? It's a cracking name. We've got to work out who wins the $100 cash.
Mate, I know. Is that true what you said to Nathan Lyon? Can you come on the Jimmy Smith show? We need to get it out now, Tris. We need to get it.
What do you reckon? You and he had that lined up from a mile away.
I reckon.
Absolute mile away. Hey, I know you're in lockdown, and I know you'd like us to go through ball by ball for your ACT Comets career, but listen, mate, we've got other things we've got to do. We're in freedom here now in New South Wales, which you're going to join in about a week's time.
I hope you get off this call and kick your tail on the table.
More push-ups, Bradley. More push-ups.
Oh, that was great, guys. Always good to have a good chat. And, looking forward to the big World Cup kicking off shortly. And, I'm looking forward to having another chat when you're out and about, Bradley.
I can't wait.